Hello and welcome to the Monster Mechanics Podcast, where we take creatures of myth and media and see how they can be improved. I am your host, Scott Paladin, and with me as always is the jewels to my Vincent, Zach Jakeways. Zach, what are we talking about today?
This week, we are talking about ghosts.
Yeah. So, ghosts are, as you pointed out before we started recording, like, they are probably the most widely believed in creature that we're probably going to cover here. Possibly only rivaled by Bigfoot. Lots of people seem to believe in Bigfoot, but I think even more believe in ghosts.
Yeah.
Ghosts are like an after image or spirit of dead people that still inhabit our world. They can be differentiated from other types of undead as being, because they are almost entirely incorporeal. They're either visions that don't interact with the physical world, or they are sometimes able to minorly interact with the physical world through things like Ouija boards or just knocking shit over.
I'll be right back.
Oh, you got dogs? Yeah. We didn't even make it 2 minutes in recording without a dog interruption.
Apologies. There was a dog outside.
So, ghosts are, they're like the least interactive, not the least interactive, but the least physical of all of the undead variations, right? Like, these aren't corpses. They aren't skeletons. They're not zombies. They are just like a floating image sometimes. Sometimes they're even invisible. In the case of a lot of poltergeists, are like completely invisible. But they are generally believed to be the spirit or soul of somebody who's died and has not left the mortal plane. And so therefore making a kind of interaction with it. And that's kind of the only commonality. That's not even maybe completely common. Ghosts can be any kind of spirit, really, because there's like just tons and tons of different versions of this from various cultures. We're kind of coming at it from the English speaking world's version of them.
Just about every culture has, here's what happens when you're dead. Don't stay dead.
Yep. So it raises me some questions immediately, because the first thing I think of is like, oh, okay. If there is a ghost that, is your spirit that is left after when you die, is that like a soul that like refuses to move on to the afterlife, or is that like an after image or something along those lines? Like, is it something like, what is this thing? There was a version of it in Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality that I really liked, which is that when powerful magic users die, the magic that they release that's like been pent up in them essentially imprints their personality into the world around them.
Interesting.
Which I think is a rad idea.
Yeah.
Although I think limiting it to only magical users is maybe not something that we would want to do unless we were already working in a heavily magical usered populated world already.
I think one of the common things is like generally has to do with like unfinished business or
some sort of lacking closure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which
I think
is kind of an interesting thought that like basically I wonder if it's almost like sort of a method of like placating people, like, you know, if you haven't taken care of something, you know, like your spirit is going to persist behind until that work is done.
Yeah. The only trouble I have with the like unfinished business version of it is that it's not hard to write a version of the unfinished business where they can never be completed, you know, and then that leaves all ghosts in a situation where they might never be, you know, have their story come to an end. And that feels untidy to me. Like, it seems like there should be some sort of circumstance whereby you can come up with a way to placate them, you know, or mollify them or something like that. But I do like it. I do like the idea of it being unfinished business or something about like what's the word? Like, what's the way to put it? Like, there's a longing or a yearning there. Like, something about like
there's got to be something that ties them to the physical world. Like, it could be unfinished business. It could be like maybe like a strong attachment to a loved one.
Yeah.
Like just basically being unwilling to let go of the physical world and move on.
Yeah. And there's also like there's two distinct versions of ghosts in like there's like the popular culture ghost of like Casper the Friendly Ghost, which is like a fully formed like brain. Like that is a whole entity with wants and desires and the ability to communicate. And it's a sentience, right?
Yeah.
And then there's also like the one that's kind of that seems to be more prevalent in both like horror and then also just like ghost hunters, like people who actually believe in the existence of ghosts. seem to encounter something or describe something more like a memory or an echo, where like the ghosts themselves aren't like a fully formed person. They're just sort of like an entity that is like some part of a person left over and has like some interaction, but they're not like stating wants and desires and speaking eloquently. Like it's like a half asleep dream version of someone, or like one that doesn't, like they're not growing and learning, you know? Which I think that has an appeal to me, because a version of a ghost that doesn't get to grow makes sense, because otherwise you might have a ghost that you die at age 30 and then you spend 300 years as a ghost. Well, like then you're, most of the time that you've ever had has been ghost, like 99% of your time as anything is a ghost, which like wouldn't you have all that time to like read and learn and become like really like, you'd be like an old wizened master at that point. Like,
I mean, to me, that's almost like a more interesting take than like that sort of snapshot of a person just stuck in time. Like in a world with ghosts, that's a very interesting way to pursue, is like someone who has, you know, time to learn and grow without being tethered to mortal needs.
Right. At which point that becomes a full blown afterlife, right? Like this is a version where you die, but instead of going to heaven, you just stick around and bug the people who are still alive. There's also, I'm reminded also of the version of ghosts in Terry Pratchett. Specifically.
Yeah, you'll have to refresh my memory.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head, because I want, if there's a spoiler thing, I want to give it. I do not remember which witch's book it was. I think it's the one that's based off of Macbeth, the name of which I cannot remember, because they have a character who dies. That's going to bug me. Anyway, I wasn't going to do that much spoilery information, because it's mostly general, which is the idea that ghosts in that world, like they're still fully realized people, but because they lack all of the biology of being human, they don't have any glands. They don't have a brain. They don't have like the ability, they don't have desires and things like that that come from the body. And they also can't experience the same sort of like venal pleasures that we would do. Like they're not going to go, you know, eat a bunch of Oreo cookies because they're hungry. You know, they don't get hungry anymore, and they don't derive any pleasure from that. And so therefore it like changes the personality somewhat, because you are removed from all of these like earthly desires, you know, and it allows your brain to sort of just be the most of itself that it can be. Is an interesting take on it.
Yeah, it seems like more almost AI than.
Yeah. Very much like an uploading yourself to the cloud, you know, version of yourself. I wonder if we could make it like a spectrum to explain multiple different versions of the ghost phenomenon.
Okay.
So we're going to imagine that like the ghost as an entity is essentially an impression left on the world by a dead person. That seems like a good enough place to start.
Yeah. I like that.
That allows for quite a variety in the amount of impression left by people.
An
example would be if you are walking through a sandy beach, depending on how wet the sand is and how heavy you are, you're going to leave different sized footprints, right? So like if the sand is compressed very hard and you're not a very heavy person, you're walking lightly, you're going to leave these light little footprints. And if you're very heavy and the sand is loose and very wet, you're going to leave these big, deep ones. And that might be the difference between a ghost who is like a fleeting memory of a person that just inhabits a corridor, you know, that you see sometimes, but that like there's not really much there because they didn't leave much of an imprint when they died, versus somebody who left, you know, they died more violently, or they died with greater emotion at the time, or they had more left undone, which leaves more of an impression and leaves more of a person behind. I think that makes sense.
So is that phenomenon of like that, like what you said about that, like that kind of impression and like the,
yeah,
is that more of like an environmental thing or like related to the person in your mind?
So I'm thinking a combination of the two.
Okay.
Where like there's multiple factors, where one thing I'm sort of in my head I'm thinking is that ghosts are location based. Like there's, you always think about the ghost of such and such house, or like the ghost of a hall or something like that. This seems to be very like, ghosts don't go traveling, like they don't go on vacation.
Yeah, there's a reason there's like haunted houses rather than
where it's like you're going to haunt a place. And so something about that location must have like the ability to take a ghost in. you know, like there must be a little bit of like floating magic in the air or something like that, or maybe the veil between the separation between the spirit world and our world is thinner there. So it allows an impression to be made, but sufficient at the same time, like if the person who's creating the ghost is not particularly in stress at the time, or they're not in tune with something, with the spirituality of the spirit world or something like that, then maybe they have a like an upper limit that they can leave, you know, because they're not well disposed to create a ghost. Whereas somebody else who is, you know, I don't know, a magic user or something like that, maybe because they've got more of that built in, they understand it more, and if they die with like great emotion in a location, then like it leaves, because like they have so much more available to them, they leave more of an impression as well. So I think like it can be both, I think.
Okay.
I also like the idea that you can leave behind a ghost without dying.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but like there's an idea that I think this is just one I read off the internet, which was the idea of ghosts being like breaks in time, where like a little bit of one time seeps into another, and you perceive it as a ghost, but really it's just like something that happened at a different time.
Interesting.
Like the idea being like you walk down a corridor and you see like a little Victorian boy running across the corridor. Mm-hmm. That was a moment that happened 100, 200 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you just happened to be seeing the, you know, it from, you know, because the time looped back in on itself, you happened to see it. And obviously that's a fraught connection between this time and that. And therefore you're only seeing it briefly and in a weird way. But that like, would allow for the idea of like, that wasn't the moment that child died. It was just a day in the corridor for him, you know? Mm-hmm. And similarly, he might have seen you at the same time, you know, and to him, you would have been a ghost.
Interesting. I really like that idea. And that kind of like brings like the idea that maybe there's like something with emotion or some sort of like, I guess, gravitas that like affects time, like, and that's like relative to each person, like their own timeline, as it were.
Yeah, I'm thinking something along the lines of, I mentioned, you know, the spirit world or whatever, and how there's, you know, maybe it interacts with our world in various places. And I like the idea that the spirit world doesn't exist, the time dimension doesn't exist there.
Okay.
You know, and so things all happen all at once within the spirit realm. Mm-hmm. And so that when it interacts with our timeline, that happens in very weird ways. You know, so you could meet your own ghost because your ghost that was created after your death, perhaps, happens to be interacting with the world in a weird, jumbled, mixed up way, whereby it is to, you know, the ghost will be created in your future. But because the spirit realm doesn't have time, when you interact with the spirit realm at some point, you meet the version of yourself that was created by your own death.
Interesting. See, like, I like kind of like there's like this sort of metaphor or simile that's been kind of forming in my mind as we've been talking about this, and like that, like the fabric of time or reality, like being affected differently by each person's soul, and like a person with a very rough soul or something might have. Hey, I'm talking here. Sorry about that. Dogs are digging. So a person with like a rough soul, or like a soul that very much sort of grates on the fabric of reality and time, like leave these little burrs or threads that kind of poke up and get caught and pulled through. And that's why you kind of get like these appearances of just like random moments in this person's past.
I love the metaphor of like the person's soul, like, yeah being rough and catching on the fabric. That's really interesting. Maybe it's like there's definitely a traditional correlation between like very strong emotions and like ghosts, I think. That like that because like something like having unfinished business, like dying before your time and feeling wronged by it, that wrongedness, that like feeling of injustice, is a very strong emotion. And similarly, there are stories of like people who die with like, you know, a lot of love for someone else, like they're yearning for another person, also becoming ghosts. And so like the idea that like maybe that strong emotion roughens your soul in that way. Like it makes these jaggedy points on your spirit that cause you to catch against the fabric of the spirit world, the fabric of reality, and cause little holes and tears and stuff like that. And therefore, like, so if you if you die with, you know, while being super, super angry, then like you are more likely to like to catch and to get caught up in the fabric of the spirit world.
Your soul just passing through time, putting runs in the pantyhose of reality.
Yeah, basically. That's cool. So that's a pretty bare bones version of like creating ghosts, right? Like it's okay, well, you know, it's impacting upon the fabric of the spirit world, the fabric of reality. I'm thinking like, I call it the spirit world, but I think it's like the spirit substrate of our own universe, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's innately caught up with, it's like not really separate. It's just a field that is part of our own world. I wonder if there are interesting interactions that we can talk. Like we already talked about the idea that maybe you could create a ghost without dying, you know, that like, if something particularly traumatic to you or causes you to have lots of emotion in the right place at the right time, that spirit realm is more active to you or more accessible to you. You could leave behind an impression and then you leave and that impression stays in that area, even though you leave off from it. Are there any other ideas like that we can think about? Like,
well, I mean, like going back again to that sort of fabric thing, like I'm sure the fabric of different places is like, you know, sturdier or thinner. That's a pretty common trope. It's like, oh, the veil is thin here.
And
in this case, the veil is a little more literal, I guess.
I'm trying to think, like, how can you identify somewhere where, how do we identify, or is there a commonality for where these breaks in reality might be? Like, is a waterfall more likely to be a narrow place between the spirit world and ours than, say, I don't know, a forest or a clearing or something like that?
I mean, like you could have it partly just be like based on the people who have been there in the past, with their area, like their souls kind of abrading the area a bit.
Oh, so like at a place where people have had strong emotions in the past creates these areas of thinness. If it's people that create these things through their emotions, creates these thin spaces. That's interesting. I also really like the idea that the old idea of the fairy circle, or I'm not sure, excuse me if I get this wrong, but like a lot of times stone circles that where people erect cairns in an area are associated with like the fae world and stuff. And I like the idea that maybe those were put up specifically because like the locals identified one of these thin areas, one of these areas where these things are likelier to happen than anything else, and are like specifically trying to ward people off from it, you know? Yeah. Okay. I was thinking about Will of the Wisp too, where like that you could rope them in as well, where that's just an impression that had been made that people are seeing sort of from a distance. So they can't make out exactly what it is, but it's like a glowing light in the forest, you know? As the memory of something that had happened before.
That's kind of another interesting idea, is like, if we're going with the idea that like spirit world is all place or like all times at once, like if what you're seeing there is like a glimmer of yourself. And so the way like everyone's like, oh, a will-o-wisp will lead you to your death, is because like you're seeing these glimpses of this will-o-wisp like moments ahead of you, like time.
Oh, that's crazy, where it becomes a self-fulfilling thing where you're following the thing that you think is leading you somewhere, but what you're actually doing is following your own after image being projected backward in time. And if you hadn't have spotted it, you wouldn't have died. That's really cool. That's f-ing rad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah. Okay, cool. So is there a way to exploit this? Is there something we can think of? Cause both of us are have that kind of brain. We're like,
oh yeah. Yeah, no, my memory's already been sort of turning that over. Like,
yeah.
If someone has the option of like creating a tangible enough like ghost of themselves that they can then interact with, or a ghost of someone else that they need information from or something.
I love the idea of like somebody who has, God, this is dark. Excuse me for this next thing that I'm about to say, but you've got the creepy stalker guy. That is the character we're starting with. All right.
I'm glad you're going this direction, because my mind already jumped onto that as well.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So you've got the creepy stalker guy who's in love with someone else, and he brings them to one of these narrow places and does something to cause them to elicit a lot of emotion, probably scaring the shit out of them. causing them to leave behind an image that when they run away, that image is trapped there for him to experience and enjoy and interact with, because he's like, he's trapped their face there basically that he can watch.
Oh yeah. That's horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. That's creepy as hell. I love that.
That brings up an interesting story, like, or adventure hook, where like a party is tasked with like dealing with this ghost that's been terrorizing people. But they get there and they find out that it's this woman, or some other person who's been trapped here by this stalker person.
Yeah.
And they want you to deal with that person and put them to rest, or to not put them to rest, but put them down.
Yeah. 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 They want justice, right?
Yeah.
Like they can't leave until this has been put right. Mm-hmm. I like that. And in that case, maybe the thing where I was talking a little bit about how there should be a way to put it right, you know, and maybe it's like, you don't always have to like fulfill a quest that way. Like you don't have to always, like you wouldn't necessarily have to kill that dude. Cause what if you come across the lady's ghost and it's 200 years later and that dude already died of natural causes as a fat, happy old man 100 years ago. Like there's no justice in the world there. And instead what you have to do is identify what the emotion was that caused her to become trapped here. So something like fear, right? Because that was the emotion that caused her to become trapped. And then what you have to do is find some way to negate the fear, to like, you know, like basically got therapy for ghosts as a way to like exercise them, you know, or like.
No, that actually, I love that idea. Yeah. Like,
where like it's about going in and making a connection with the person and like bringing them down from what is essentially a 200 year long panic attack, you know, and like talking them through it. That's a cool moment that would also be really fun.
Yeah. Where you don't have a world with quite as many ghost hunters as you do ghost counselors.
Yeah. 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 That makes me think a little bit about the idea of a medium, somebody who is more attuned to experiencing ghosts because they are, maybe they're a little bit like an antenna. Like they've got something about their personality allows them to be in tune with the spirit world and they interact with it more easily. Maybe that, and the default way that a fantasy writer would do this is like, oh, well it's biological, right? Like it's genetic that like your father was a medium and therefore you will be too, which I think is played out.
Yeah, I'm tired of genetic based anything.
Yeah, F that. But I do like the idea that it's lineage. It's just who raised you instead, which gives you some shade of it being I come from a long line of mediums, but it's because each of us were raised in such a way as to become a medium, right? And which means that you could adopt somebody as a baby and raise them, and despite the fact that you have no blood relation to them, they would grow up with the same proclivity that you might, just because of, and it could be something as simple as like, you know, like how you look at the world and like the questions that you ask about the world around you, you know, like paying attention to these things. And like, it could be one of those things where maybe the average person has been taught sort of forget the spirit world, like don't pay attention to it because it's freaking dangerous, right? Like in this world we're talking about, if you follow a will o' the wisp, you might literally die.
Yeah.
Whereas if you had ignored it, you would have gone off. Whereas mediums might be the kind of people who are trained to look for that. And then like, you know, they know the rules about like, well, if you see the will of the wisp, don't follow them, you know? And like, if you see this, you know, if you see another kind of spirit, here's what you know to do, you know? So it's about how you interact with them instead.
I like that this inherently can create a wide spectrum of individuals. Like you can get the ones who see these phenomenon and want to help. And then you get the ones who are aware of these phenomenon and want to exploit it. And that's where you get necromancers, basically.
Yeah, one version of them, for sure.
Yeah, like they would basically be sort of like that guy who's bringing people to these thin areas, terrorizing them to create his own ghosts. And then you would get the people who are like doing the opposite, like trying to put those ghosts to rest.
Yeah, yeah. This is a slight divergence from exactly where we were, but the idea that you could interact with ghosts from the far future is also really cool to me. The story conceit of somebody from the past trying to interpret something from the future in their own, because like if you were a medieval peasant and you see a guy firing a gun, right?
Yeah.
Like you would have no context as to what a gun was or what like that was chemically based. And so like, I love the idea of like some of the like visions and creatures of the forest, the dark things in the forest are visions of the far future. Things that would like that will or could happen in far in the future that like become interpreted as monsters and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
you know, dragons as planes as dragons, or like tanks as chimeras or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Where like you see a thing happen and you go, oh, that's, you know.
And because we've established that like ghosts can interact with the world, like those are still dangerous to the people, like
yeah.
in this time, even though they have no context for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh man, I love the idea of the haunted forest that everybody says is always full of like thunder and cracks of lightning and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's tons of ghosts there all the time. And it's because that is the site of a battle of 100, 200 years in the future where like explosions and guns and stuff are used.
Yeah.
And so like way before that ever happens, in fact, as far back as anyone can ever remember, that battle is always being fought in that forest. That's how bad it was. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
And yeah, and an interesting like story premise might be like the character is like trying to figure out like how to avert this.
Oh, that's cool. So you eliminate the haunting not by like solving the problems of the ghost, but in fact figuring out, oh, this is something that's going to happen in the future. How do we prevent it? Mm-hmm. And literally just changing the timeline and preventing that happen.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Oh, that's a rad adventuring hook actually for some like level 4, you know, D&D, you have them interact, your party interact with a with these ghosts, and then also like the nations of the area are preparing for war, and they're probably like, you start like setting up, you give them enough clues to figure out what's going on, and then you know, you realize that it's going to be this massive battle that you need to prevent, and then like the moment that you get like one or both of the opposite leaders to the bargaining table and they start negotiating about it instead, the whole place stops being haunted because they've averted the future timeline. That's rad.
Yeah, that is cool.
What else can we attribute to this? Because like obviously this could be the, you know, this phenomenon of the ghost creation could be a explanation for lots of like fey creatures and like monsters of the forest and stuff like that. Hmm. Because you're seeing visions of those things. Oh God, what if I was just thinking about, what if people have been seeing lights in the sky for as long as I can remember, and it's because at some point in the future the sky is going to burn.
Ooh.
And they're seeing ghostly images of it.
Interesting, yeah.
I was just, because I was thinking about aurora, and I'm like, uh-huh. Well, what if aurora were ghosts, you know? Like the ghost of like of the apocalypse, the end of the world. Like you're seeing mm-hmm. forward to the end of the entire world. And they're getting worse and worse every year as you get closer to it. That's a hell of an omen.
Yeah. Yeah, going back to like that whole like averting the war thing, like, mm-hmm. like I love the idea that like that's like specifically caused because the war itself is like so awful and traumatic that it's causing like
I mean, it causes a whole like continent of people to all have like these incredibly strong emotions that drive them to tear at the fabric of reality. Mm-hmm. Of course,
And like, so you've got like these ghost counselors, or until we've have some better word for that.
Mediums. Yeah.
Yeah. Mediums. We'll go with mediums. Like basically like dealing with like these individual ghosts and just being just run ragged, just trying to like solve the crises of all these ghosts, and just like gradually coming to the conclusion that this is absolutely untenable. Like there's nothing that they can do.
And then you have the radical one who figures out the time, angle of it, mm-hmm. and realizes that like if they avert the destruction of the world through this war, that they can solve the whole problem all at once. And in fact, at the same time, save the world, you know? Mm-hmm. That reminds me of an idea that I've been sort of mulling around, which is the opposite of the chosen one, which is the person who's chosen to be the hero. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the idea of somebody who like sees a problem and demands to be, that it needs to be fixed. And that is what makes a hero, instead of, oh, there was a prophecy that this was going to happen.
I hate prophecy in storytelling. Just throwing that out there. It's the laziest method of storytelling to me.
Yeah. I like it when there's been a couple of times that I've seen it done that I ended up liking it. And spoilers for Babylon 5. there are some prophecies in Babylon 5, which mm-hmm. are explained by it being a 1,000-year-long time loop.
Okay.
The events that happened during the course of the show that were prophesized to have happened is because one of the dudes from the show goes back 1,000 years to be the chosen one of the previous time, like mm-hmm. to be the guy of legend. And he goes back and he's now like their Jesus because he went back in time and saved the universe, then causes a prophecy to happen because he already knows what's going to happen in the future. That I think is a rad version of it. But like the one where it's like, oh, in 100 years time, there will be such and such guy who will come down and he'll save the world. And, you know, here's how you'll know him.
Without spoiling anything, I feel like the Mistborn saga is probably handled prophecy the best of any story I've seen.
I forget how they do that, because I forget there was I don't remember there being a lot of prophecy in that one. I remember, except for that. Okay, let me see if I can remember. The idea, spoilers, I guess, the Lord Protector, right? Like the God King guy, when he takes in all the power, doesn't he like see the future, basically predicts what's going to happen, and then spends his entire existence over a couple thousand years like trying to prevent it from happening? It's not so much that he's like looking forward in the future, it's just that he sees everything and like can like watch the pieces on a chessboard, basically, where it's like, oh, well, this will happen and then this will happen.
But at the same time, there is an entity that is modifying that prophecy,
yeah,
so that it's actually like at the start of the story, like the prophecy you're getting is completely untrue.
Yeah.
And so it's them sort of like piecing together what the actual truth is.
Yeah.
For a lot of really cool ideas. Like, honestly, if you haven't read Mistborn, go read it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mistborn is at least, well, how about this? Read the first three books.
Sure. Yeah.
I started on the next ones because he said it was going to be three books and then it was going to be like nine books. And now it's going to be like 21 books. Freaking Brandon Sanderson has never met. He's never written a novel that was too long. He's never written a story that had too much going on. Dude just wants everything to be absolutely massive in scope. I do think that there are, yeah, that the first three Mistborn books, the original ones that focus on Vin, are really, really fantastic world building. And also, like, the magic system that's in Mistborn is like a masterclass in, like, how to take a simple idea and make it hugely powerful through exploitation, like smart people using their powers to the in interesting and fun ways is like how everything in that world works. And it gives the impression that nobody is just sitting around on their hands being like, I've got this useless power, I guess I'm gonna like just deal with it. No, like they figure out a way to make it useful. And then sometimes that becomes the most powerful one of all. Like that's fantastic. I love that.
Oh yeah.
So you can't mention Mistborn, like, Zach, because we will just get derailed for a minute while we talk about.
Yeah. It's definitely a dangerous thing. And it can also be kind of dangerous because it's one of those things where they've taken something kind of common, which is like the idea of magic in a world, and they've done it up to the nines. And that's a tough act to follow.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay, so back to our Ghosts world.
Mm-hmm. Ghost world just sounds like a really bad 90s schlock horror.
Maybe that'll be our Dread game this weekend, because I still have to plan that shit.
Oh, yeah.
I probably will do the movie conceit like I did last time. That worked pretty well.
Yeah.
I think we've been at this long enough. Hopefully there wasn't 20 minutes worth of connection problems in our audio here. So hopefully we do have enough time. I think it's we've been at this long enough. I think we can move on to some listener questions.
Sure.
So, forgive me if I can't quite remember which one of these we've covered. So if I ask you one and you go, hey, I think we've said that, then remind me.
All right.
So, KJ at Lunar Arboretum asks, which monster gives the best hugs?
The best hugs.
So I'm going to pull owlbear, a literal bear hug, right? Mm-hmm. But then also fluffy owl down at the same time,
ooh,
which I think is a winning combination.
Yeah. I think you're onto something there. I think as long as you don't mind all your bones being crushed to pulp.
Yeah, that's true. With the caveat that, of course, the owlbear has to be like trying not to hurt you.
Let's see. Best hugs. I like to think that there's just like some orc out there who just gives really good hugs.
Just
feeling,
he's just like just practiced. Like,
yeah.
He's really got it down. I'm going to give an honorable mention to our version of the Kraken, who has got fractal tentacles and therefore could conceivably hug everyone on the planet at the same time. But you admittedly with some tentacles, but you know, I think it counts. Let me see. I got this other list. We're gonna be living off of Richard Kreutz Landry for like.
I saw that he had some stuff to say.
He's nice enough. When I called out for questions, he's given us quite a lot. So which monster has the rankest farts?
Does my dog count?
I don't know. It depends if she's a, I mean, is she a creature of myth or media? She's very cute. Is that enough for myth? Like, is she cute enough to be in myth?
I'm certain she's given, you know, some fake creatures a ride or two in their time.
So I think for particularly rank farts, my understanding, I don't have a sense of smell, so I can't compare these things. But aren't like ungulates and like farm animals like particularly bad?
I know they create a lot of methane.
It seems like you need something with the digestive system of an ungulate of some sort, I think. Maybe something, something that's got a mismatch between its what it eats and what it can fart, like what it can actually digest. So it's entirely possible that centaurs might have particularly rank farts.
Ooh.
Because they're going to be eating all kinds of human stuff and then trying to use horse digestion to digest it. Or possibly eating it, digesting it in the human part, and then the human, like, pre-digested stuff then gets passed over to the horse side, already digested. That can't be good, right?
Like, yeah, that's got to be pretty terrible. I was going to go with ghouls, because they're eating rotting meat.
Yeah, yeah, rotting meat's probably really bad. Yeah, it's got to be some particularly rank farts.
And also the idea of a farting ghoul is just amusing to me, so.
It's very... fourth grade sense of humor of like,
yeah.
In the ultra, okay, so here's one from Grays at Grayest.
Okay.
In the alternate universe where you two are the monster hosts of a human mechanics, what are your monster sonas?
My monster sona. I got to give that one a moment of thought.
If it's a D&D world, then I'm going to be a null because I love hyenas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I chose hyenas as my favorite creature or my favorite animal when I was in second grade, and I'm ride or die on that.
you're loyal to your second grade self. I'll give you that.
Yeah. I just like hyenas, and so therefore, gnolls in the D&D world, gnolls as a as the, you know, just hyena furry dudes. Like, okay, I'll go with that. For like more traditional monsters, I don't know.
If we're going the D&D, like I feel like my mind just keeps going back to kobold, so I'm gonna have to go with that.
I mean, kobolds are good. They got charisma, man. Like. Oh God! What I missed the opportunity to bring up the squonk again, which is an American folktale about a creature that is so ugly that when you perceive it, it dies into a puddle of tears.
I think we'd have to do this like with the Zoom video off.
Yeah,
you have to
mute the Zoom video. But like, it didn't say anything about hearing, so like, podcast format is perfect for the squonk.
Yeah. Now you got me thinking about like what monsters would actually be inclined to host podcasts. Like Medusa would be one.
The hide behind.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, which is a creature that is always behind people. Like it can't be seen. It always has to be behind them. So
just whispering there, hey, could you move closer to the mic?
I just got to put one on my back, like strap a microphone to between my shoulder blades for the hide behind.
Yeah, it's like the Medusa or Gorgon would be a prime candidate for hosting a podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, definitely have some problems if you're going to be a siren. causing people to drive off the road. All right. Okay, we're going to do one more from Mr. Richard Kreutzlandry at R. Kreutzlandry. Some of these are too easy. Like, which monster would kick Conan's ass? Is like, I'm assuming he's meaning Conan the Barbarian and not Conan the Late Night Host, because the Conan the Late Night Host is basically all of them.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd bet on Conan in a fight. Conan, the late night host, and Conan O'Brien. That's his last name. I would not bet on Conan O'Brien in most situations. Conan the Barbarian is obviously a barbarian of high rank. So you'd need something with a CR value of what? Like,
yeah, probably 20 plus.
Yeah, yeah. Or
something immune to physical damage.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Because if you're assuming that Conan doesn't have magical weaponry, then like he's not going to be able to attack vampires. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just go for a high CR value creature that is immune to physical damage, and I think you'll be able to take him down. Which monster should be in Smash Brothers?
Which monster should be in Smash Brothers? I feel like you got to go with like Smash Brothers is all about like taking those iconic characters from each of their IP. So I'd say probably like if you're going from the D&D side of things, you probably either want the Beholder or an Illithid.
Nah, yeah.
Just get those classic D&D monsters
I think the Beholder would be an interesting one to pull in because of the like beam attack thing. Like you could have a whole like ranged game problem, and he would have a really good he'd have really good air recovery because like they float, right? So
kind of pull in the Jigglypuff mechanics and
But the one I would pull is Dracula, specifically Castlevania Dracula.
Oh,
because like classic, you could not find a more classic monster than Dracula, and it's already from video games. So like there's a whole legend, you know,
I mean, you've already got Belmont in there anyways.
So. So it's like all you have to do is pull in his villain, which they've done before, you know, so I don't know what kind of game he'd have, but I do think that he'd have some good sound bites, you know, what is a man and all that stuff. So, all right. Well, in that case, if you have questions for us, you can tweet us at MonsterMPod. And other than that, we will see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Until next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Monster Mechanics is produced and edited by me, Scott Paladin, and hosted by myself and my best friend, Zach Jakeways. All the ideas generated during this podcast are released under a Do What the F*** You Want public license.